This is the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast for May 4th, 2015. Welcome to the Everybody's Talking at Once podcast. My name is Drew Messenger-Michaels, and I thank you, as always, for being here. So it has been a minute since the most recent episode, and there are a couple of reasons for that, to do with real life more than the podcast or the blog itself. One really big thing is my mom got diagnosed with a rather aggressive form of uterine cancer, and after surgery, after chemotherapy, she's fine. I've been telling people that she kicked cancer's ass, and she actually objects to that verbiage on the grounds that, number one, it's crass, as she puts it, and number two, for her, she says, cancer was not so much a foe, an adversary, something worthy of that much respect or confrontation. Cancer was a hindrance, an annoyance. And that's my mom in a nutshell. My mom is the kind of person for whom cancer is an inconvenience. So, I love you, Mom. Fuck cancer. And I'm back and glad to be back. So, this week, Zach Barth. He was here to talk about Infinifactory and his other games a while ago, and we said we were going to do a part two with no spoilers barred once I'd had a chance to play through the game. So, after the first two Infina updates and after I've played through the game, we're doing just that. So, if you care, I should mention, spoilers aplenty for Infinifactory in the interview ahead, but it's a great conversation. I am very excited for everybody to hear it and to see the game continue to grow. So, without further ado, here is Zach Barth for the second of three times. Fuck cancer. Really, seriously, fuck cancer. And hooray for video games and the rest of life. Hey Zach, how's it going?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly. Make sure the recorder is working. Looks like it is. Cool. All right. Well, so, full disclosure, I have not yet finished all of the new content from the update.
Oh, that's okay. But you played through the rest of the game.
Yes, and it's awesome. And I, I'm a guy who usually sees twists coming, and I should have seen the big one in the game coming, but I totally didn't because I suck. To dive right into it, man, all the emotional beats were really, like, the I'm that guy who, you know, human skeletons, whatever, and then as soon as I saw the dog, I was like, that's too much, and then the fact that, that there's a callback to it later, right? Like, they literally, as you're getting ramped up for there to be a resistance, it's like, how could they do that to a dog, you know? So anyway, you played me like a cheap violin, just for the record.
We should talk, are you recording?
I am, yeah.
Okay, so can we start talking about stuff?
Yeah, totally. I'm
okay.
I mean, if you'd like to talk about the weather first, we can.
I wasn't sure. Yeah, so the dog thing was actually, I was surprised. People reacted. A lot of people had the exact same reaction that you did, which is that, like, oh, skeletons, dead people, tragic, you know, tragic people stories, whatever. But, like, as soon as the implication that there's a dead dog, people flipped out.
And partly, there was some, yeah.
Somebody tweeted at us, they're like, I like Infinifactory, but I hope Zachtronics doesn't keep putting dead dogs in their games. It's like, what? This isn't like a thing. This is like a one-time thing we did. And honestly, it wasn't even about like trying to be like, oh, look, it's a dead dog. It's so sad. It was more so that like the aliens had no idea like what was what on Earth. And so, like, they like, you know, just part of their process of sucking everybody up, like, they abducted, like, a dog in the process, and they even, like, made it, like, a little dog suit, and it, like, wasn't very effective, because dogs don't have the same problem-solving skills that people do. And that was where the joke came from, and everybody, like, nobody, like, even noticed that. They're just like, it's a dead dog. How tragic.
Like, no, I thought the joke read. I just thought it was all, partly it was because the audio, the failure log was so long. There was so much whimpering and like, you know, just all of that. So I don't know. It's like it. I think it worked on both levels. It definitely gave you the sense that okay, they're abducted. You know, like somewhere there's a little ferret in a suit and whatever.
Yeah.
But
the
it also
ran the factory.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Yeah.
So
no.
I think everybody else got hung up on the fact that it was just a dead dog.
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, it is, cause so I think the other thing people are reacting to talk about, like the structure of the game, is that I think most people trying to tell this story would start with the kind of, I don't know, straight up confusion, or maybe even the wide eyed wonder, which you get some of in some of the audio logs, and then, you know, ramp your way up or down, depending on your perspective, to absolute horror. And then, you know, work your way back up to hope. But it kind of starts with open horror in terms of people's reactions, which is way more like how I imagine it would really be were aliens to start abducting people and forcing them to solve, you know, engineering and manufacturing problems.
Exactly. We were really trying to mirror the player experience with the story. So, like, first off, like, obviously, like, this is, like, kind of a, like, a mundane sci-fi story. Like, I guess it's a little bit more fancy because there's aliens and stuff, but like
mundane in the sense that mostly what you're doing is laying down conveyor belts with cool backgrounds.
Yeah, right. Well, and it's just like there's not that, like, the stuff that's happening isn't that amazing, and like it kind of is amazing, but like it's kind of, we're trying to portray it in a realistic fashion. Like Star Wars is very fantastical, you know.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
we're trying to make this like, you know, something that was more believable, and it kind of lined up really well with the way that players feel about the game as they're playing it. So when you start playing a game like Infinite Factory or Space Chem, you're horrified, and like it's terrifying and difficult, and all the people who stop playing the game, basically all the dead bodies and like what kills them represent like the different things that get people to stop playing the game as they go through. And the fact that you're still playing is that you're still alive. If you ever stop playing the game, it's like your character died. Like they just got stuck out there. You know, unable to proceed. And like that's the thing that kills everybody, is that they're not able to solve the puzzles and they get stuck there. And so the people who get stuck early on are just sort of like really confused and often angry, just like all kinds of crazy emotions, you know. But then the people who get along further, like they're actually like, they're the people who understood how to solve those, like build the factories well enough that they started getting into it. And that was sort of their coping mechanism, is being able to get into it. Or just be really good at it, like with Marianne and stuff.
Right. Well, and the dark next step of that joke is that I've definitely had games where I was Floyd, where I got really into it, I felt like I'd mastered it, and then I hit kind of a point where I was like, you know what? This might be it for me. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like Yeah. I hadn't really thought of it that way, that those are the different personalities of the people that, you know, that don't finish a game.
Exactly.
And then I suppose there, you know, since we're in full on spoiler territory, which I will mention, I will mention and mention in the intro, because there, you know, the game surprises are really cool. I thought that the personality types in when you meet the people in the Resistance were really, really well drawn, because those are the sorts of people who would persevere to that point in the game, right? The kind of nebbish guy who like lucked his way through, and then somebody who's just kind of hard as nails, and then somebody who's such a nerd and so interested in just, you know, absorbing information that of course they're going to thrive in this kind of environment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm probably more the I don't know what I am. I of course it's not a BuzzFeed quiz. The goal is not to figure out.
Yeah, are
you
a Dave or a Nia?
I'm not a Nia. Maybe in my blusteriest moments I think I'm a Nia, but I'm definitely not. Yeah. So let's talk about the twist, right? So for anybody who there may be some people listening who haven't finished the game but don't care about spoilers, right?
Yeah, it's not super important to the game, honestly.
It's like, genuinely not. Yeah, it's important to the tone, but you know, in terms of what you're there for, which is the wonderfully, just, it makes your brain feel so good to solve these puzzles, and then, you know, as we talked about last time, to solve them better, to optimize. All of that feels good, and really none of that is dependent on the setting at all. It could be taking place in a blank white room, and all of that stuff would be fundamentally the same, even though some of the trappings, like the way you learn about a new block, ties in really well with the fact that they're aliens and the fact that it's, you know, sort of intuitive, non-wall of text communication. Like, that stuff fits well with the story, but the story is not necessary for you to enjoy that.
Yeah.
So you were kidnapped by aliens. They are forcing you to solve these problems. The problems escalate in terms of complexity, and the tools you have at your disposal sort of increase. And then, you know, every time you finish a section of puzzles, you have a performance review and you receive some kind of award, be it, you know, a literal trophy or a dirty magazine, or at one point they give you a chicken, which I don't know if I bit the head off it or ate the whole thing whole.
You eat the whole thing. They treat you to dinner.
Okay,
they,
I see
they,
you. I
they
see
let you eat with them, and they serve you an Earth delicacy, because all the stuff they eat is like live or practically live. But they serve you an Earth delicacy, chicken. And it's like, it's because they're trying to reward you.
Right, you know? Right.
They're giving you valuable feedback when they talk to you. It's just unintelligible.
Yeah, I turned on the subtitles, and all it ever says is unintelligible grunting. Or I think that once you know they're called the Overlords, it says Overlord grunting sometimes. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But okay, so they give you that, and then you know finally when you complete what you think is the last series of puzzles, like the sixth series, I believe, the reward that pops up, you know, is a bomb, and it blows up, and then you're on the Resistance ship. So yes. That's really cool. And what I loved about it so much was that. You get mission briefings, right? Like you get verbal mission briefings, which add color and all that. But what you're doing is not fundamentally different, right? Like it was kind of a cool send up, especially, you know, thinking about the idea that the people you meet or the people whose corpses you find are the different personality types who would quit a game at some point. There's something really interesting about the idea that the difference between how the beginning of a game feels and the different and how the end of a game feels has less to do with what you're doing than just with your attitude, with the sense of empowerment you feel once you've mastered most of the tools and your momentum. What you're exactly. doing is getting a task and completing it as best you can. Like the fact that you're being told that you are now part of the Resistance and not just a brain slave doesn't really change the actions. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, but there are some things that are slightly different. Like you, I guess it's there have only been when you played in the Resistance campaign, there's only the one set of levels, but you can do them in any order. Mm-hmm. So there's actually a lot more freedom in what you choose to work on.
That's a really good point. Yeah. It is less leashed in terms of the sequence. Yeah. And that I guess that just felt so natural since I knew how to use so many different kinds of blocks at that point.
Exactly. It just lines up really well, right? I mean, that's stuff we would do even if the game didn't have a story. We would make a lot of the same decisions, but we kind of, you know, tightly tied the story and the... It's not just the gameplay, but sort of like the structure of the way the game is structured.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, like you said, that the story is not really necessary to understand the game or the main thing most people are there for when they play the game, and I think that's true. But I also think that part of what makes it feel so good in your brain is that it all is of a piece.
Yes.
You know, there is kind of no way to separate the way it feels to eat the live chicken from the way that it feels to finish those puzzles. Like, there is something rewarding and victorious and also dark and also sardonic about that feeling. Like,
exactly.
I'm a little hung up on the idea of the narrative as like a meta narrative about mastering a really hard game, which I don't know. I mean, it's a better meta narrative about that than Bloodborne, which is the other, you know, rather difficult game everybody's talking about now. Right. I don't know if you've played that
Not yet.
It's, I mean, you know, without spoiling that, we're already spoiling Infinifactory. I don't want to make this spoiler central, but anyway. So, what kind of reactions have you been getting? I've been talking like crazy the last like 10 minutes, which is not probably the best way to interview you. But I'm excited, right? And I'm wondering I've been kind of babbling at you. I'm assuming some people are just straight up excited about it, like I am. But I noticed in the update notes there are also like certain requests you got that you sort of begrudgingly fulfilled, stuff like achievements and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was 50% a joke. Well, and that was, yeah, so we're the game is in early access, and we've been, you know, trying really hard, especially in Reddit, we have like an early access thread, basically, where we pose questions to people, let them vote on what they want to see. We've actually gotten a lot of really good feedback. So, like, one of the big things, I think we might have talked about it last time, I don't remember how early on in the game we talked, but we added animated GIF recording.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that wasn't in the last time you and I talked, and that's
okay.
A really cool feature.
So you hit F10, and it records your solution, but it records in such a way that it loops seamlessly as a GIF that's like saved out to your desktop that you can put on Twitter or whatever. And originally, we were going to ship video recording.
Mm.
Like straight up like Space Chem style, it'll record like 10 iterations of your thing, it'll convert it to like an AUG, it takes forever, it'll upload it to YouTube. I built like 80% of this, and we didn't. It wasn't quite finished when we first launched early access, so we just disabled it. And I put a thing out on the roadmap. I was like, "Hey, do you guys want to see video recording? You know, because it'd be really easy just to finish it up." And everybody's like, "No, not really." they're like, "It doesn't seem like it would be that helpful." And I'm just like, "Shit!" Like I spent all this time getting it so we could do like it was like isometric. It looked kind of cute, and but nobody wanted it. And then I looked on. Oh God, it was probably like a month later. I was on. The Reddit or the Steam community, and somebody had uploaded a GIF that they made, and they created a like from their camera angle, they created like they flew around to a good location, recorded it with a screen cap thing, put it into some sort of video editor, and created a looping GIF. And like nobody had thought of that before, you know, none of us had certainly thought of that. But when you see it, it makes so much sense because it's really hard to build solutions in this game that don't loop. And
sure.
And the looping is great because you can just watch it until you understand it, just over and over and over again. And I was just like, holy shit, like I need to implement this. So I just like stopped everything I was doing, and I took our recording stuff, like ripped out all the YouTube and the AUG and all that stuff, and then like over the course of like a day and a half, like re-engineered it to create these animated GIFs, and everybody loved it. And it was like the best, you know, probably one of the best features in the game is the GIF feature. It's certainly one of my favorites, and that was only because we were smart enough to not do what we thought we were supposed to do and listen to what people really were doing. And so we've really, I mean, ever since then, I think that was really the thing that proved to me that, oh yeah, early access, this was totally worth it. Same thing. We've been asking people what they want to see. You know, we're doing a lot of stuff that we want to do. When it comes to what content to create, it's something that I think we have to do a lot more activity on our side, like thinking about what would be good in the game and what we could do that would be creative and that would make everybody on the team happy to, you know, spend a month making it. But with stuff like achievements, that's very much something where it's like, yeah, people say they want achievements, we should probably add achievements.
Sure. Yeah, and obviously that's not, I'm sure that's not the most laborious or time-consuming thing in the world to add.
Exactly.
I guess I just wonder if there are bigger things that people are asking for that not like the animated GIF thing, which I think is awesome. And by the way, like I didn't watch that many other people's Space Cam videos, but I've been looking at those GIFs like a lot. There's something really, really hypnotic and also, like you say, really helpful about it. But I wonder, like, if it ha have has there been like a groundswell for any larger features or, you know, like block types or whatever that you just kind of don't feel would fit?
Honestly, it's hard for people to really like jump in on the same thing. Like the one thing that people really honestly, if everybody thinks it's a good idea, it's probably a good idea.
That's a good point, yeah.
Right? And I mean, like, so the biggest one that I can think of is probably everybody really wanted the ability to move around like groups of blocks. And we sort of held off on it for a while until I started solving some of the really complex puzzles to test them. And I realized it was like, oh dear God, we need this. Like, it's so annoying building something one block away from where you need it. How do we not have this feature? So I, you know, I spent like that took a bit longer to get working, but I went and implemented it. But I guess one thing, well, people wanted to do everything, right? You should be able to move blocks, delete them, copy, paste, rotate. Like a lot of those things are actually far more advanced from a control mechanism standpoint.
Sure.
Like if you copy and paste blocks, that means like getting that, like if you're just dragging it, like the way the system works now is you can area select, and then if it's free, like if you could put the blocks in an adjacent location, you can drag it to that adjacent location. So like it's always in a good state. You're just moving from like one valid position to another.
And if it's not a valid position, it simply says you can't do that. End of
It
story.
just yeah, it just doesn't. It doesn't even say that. It just doesn't like you just grab a control handle on in 3D, and it just doesn't move if it can't.
Sure. I guess that was what I meant by says you
Oh
can't.
yeah,
Is it
yeah,
gives you some
exactly.
kind of input that's or some kind of output rather, some kind of response that says, eh, it can't go there. But with copy
Exactly.
pasting, I would assume there's all kinds of, oh man. Yeah, like
Yeah,
the yeah.
I don't even know how you would implement it, you know? I or like get that to be like super useful, because it's really important for us. If we're gonna add a feature for everybody, it needs to be usable. You know, we can create little power user features and hide them, and that's fine. But like something like this is like it's too important to be a power user feature. We needed to make it simple to use. And for the most part, I think like there were lots of people who said they wanted copy and paste, but it's sort of become a much less requested feature now that we've implemented the thing that really mattered.
Yeah, the moving, because I have the having one, you know, being one block off either on the x-axis or the z-axis is something I have done so many times, and that feature is something I definitely appreciated. And the copy paste thing is something I will tell you candidly, rolled around in my head as something that I wanted. But then I don't know, like when, you know, if I need two welders or whatever, like at different points in the assembly line, there's sometimes little things like, oh wait, it's actually better if I approach from this angle. Like I learn new stuff by iterating on, you know, little tricks or ideas that I've learned how to do. So I don't know, to me that's like a core part of the game, and so a copy paste mechanic would, I don't know if it would take away from the game, but it would prevent me from getting better.
And it's just less important.
Yeah, no, totally.
It's something we cannot do, which is always a nice thing to be able to say.
I would say. So it sounds like it's interesting because you were slightly nervous or ambivalent about early access the last time we talked. Or not even about
Oh
early
yeah.
access, but about the thing itself, but also about the perception of it, right? Like, you know, you felt the need to say it's on early access. No, that doesn't mean it's shit.
Yeah,
But
exactly. Yeah.
yeah, so I wonder if now you're a little bit more of a believer, or if you just think maybe this is the right kind of game to iterate, or if you just feel like you've had a good experience because, like you said last time, your fan base is like-minded, you know?
Yeah, I think that it's definitely the right. It was definitely the right kind of game for early access. I feel that the level at which we released into early access has worked well for succeeding as an early access title.
you know, that like have the polish, you know, the polish level was through the roof compared to the early access titles, and everybody recognized it. And it's funny that you read a lot of people talking about it and they say the game's early access, but it feels like it's a real game, you know? And
sure.
So that's a cool thing, I guess. I don't think there have been any downsides to it. Like, there's been a lot of upsides. I guess the sales have been pretty good, but for what the game is, they seem like they should maybe be better. And so there's sort of the question, like, is it because we're in early access? And like, what's going to happen when we leave early access?
Yeah.
And that's sort of the big question. And like, so you could make an argument and say that, oh, by going into early access, like you lost your launch buzz. But I mean, Space Chem launched to no one, right? And it slowly, over the course of years, built up into something that was much bigger than any other game we've ever made. It was not like a big, like, huge thing at launch at all. And so I think that if this is a similar game, there's no reason to believe that, you know, that we missed some sort of big launch. Like, no, none of our games are the kind of game that are going to get tons of, like, press attention or anything like that.
The slow burn seems way more likely. I mean, I think I don't know. I don't think you're immune.
If it's not, we're screwed. But
right. Well, I mean, if you, I did a quick search on YouTube, you know, before we talked last time and then again today, and the kinds of videos people are uploading haven't really changed. Like, nobody's really doing, like, in-depth story analysis, and nobody's really doing, like, there's relatively few Let's Plays. There's a few of those, like, hey, what the hell is this game kind of things. But mostly it's just people showing cool shit they made. And you know, the GIFs, like you say, are a really perfect delivery system for a solution. But kind of, you know, somebody talking through some cool technique they came up with. Or there's, you know, there's talking about the ramp up of difficulty. And like, here's where I got stuck. And it's people telling their story of victory. Or they're flying around and viewing it from a bunch of cool angles. Or giving you a tour. Kind of like when people make, you know, it reminded me a lot of the Minecraft computer videos, right? Of like,
yeah,
here's where
exactly.
I did this cool thing. So I feel like that it's you're just going to build up a body of that kind of cool auxiliary content over time, and a launch buzz wouldn't have really had any significant effect on that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at a minimum the game is as good as Space Chem, right? So if it doesn't do as well, it's because something's changed in the environment, and if that's the case, I don't know what we'd do in response to that. So I feel like, I don't know, I feel at least blameless. It's not really up to me at this point.
Sure, I picture you meditating under a tree and implementing features is kind of what I picture when you say that. But
yeah,
it's interesting because I think I personally, I don't know if it's just my head or if I like the aspect of moving around in 3D space or like we talked about last time, it could just be the visual polish. Like the game just feels really good to look at and walk around in. But I think overall, like I might be comfortable saying I like it better than Space Chem, and I like Space Chem a lot. So
I think it's safe to say it's better than Space Chem.
Hmm.
Like, it's not as hard as Space Chem, and it's funny that people have been complaining that none of the puzzles take more than 2 hours to beat in Infinifact.
yeah.
I'm dead serious. It was ridiculous. But, so, like, it doesn't have, like, quite that same hardcore thing, but there's no way that super-duper hardcore audience is what propped up Space Chem, because most people never played that much. Most people played it a bit, you know? And then they stopped when it started getting that hard. So I think that, I think it's strictly, like, it does Space Chem better than Space Chem.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a really, really beautiful candidate for Steam Workshop stuff and custom puzzles, because the really hardcore people can get as crazy with it as they want, and then the people who only played a little can sort of stay at that level. I mean, I think there's an under-acknowledged group of people who like to make levels, but aren't the super hardcore people. They're just interested in, like, I have one mechanic I'm obsessed with, and I'd like to explore it thoroughly. There's a lot of Portal 2 maps, for example, that are like that.
Yeah. We're actually working on advanced level editing tools right now, because one of the things that we did to kind of make level editing simple is that we stuck you in this hangar, and every puzzle that you make has to be in this hangar, and you've only got like 10 blocks to choose from, so it's kind of limited. But right now I'm working on taking our level editor and then polishing it up so that way people can make like anything.
That's really cool. That's really cool. I was bummed that you could only be in the hangar when I played with it a little bit, but it's, you know, but
it's much harder to build a level like the way we build it. And it's a lot of our tools were pretty rough, but they're getting better. So,
but that makes sense, right? I mean, like your goal was not to give it a friendly UI when you were using it internally. The goal was simply efficiency, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so we're still not, it's still not going to be nearly as easy to use, but now we have both. So if you want to make a level, you can start with the classic level editor, and then you can try out the advanced level editor and have no idea what's going on. There's some stuff that's like all those cargo containers, the way that we have to build a cargo container is that I place down a cargo container block, and that creates the model of a cargo container. But then I have to fill it in with invisible blocks, because like all of the, like it, like you know, like a single entity in the game can only be a block.
Right.
And from like a collision standpoint, so we have to like create a whole bunch of invisible blocks, and then I have to carve out a place and then put in like a special kind of input platform in it, and then put the thing that it's supposed to spawn on top of it, so that way when I save out, it prototypes that as the input. Like, it's, there's like 5 steps to build a cargo container. That was not something, and I don't feel like making it work magically, because like there's a reason we haven't done that for ourselves. It's just easier to draw the cargo container like yourself.
Right. So the goal is not to reduce those 5 steps to 3 or whatever. It's to make it intuitive why you're doing what you're doing and give everyone that ability.
Oh no, they're just gonna have to figure it out.
Even better.
It's, well, the advanced, and that's Valve's approach, really, is just release your tools, whatever state they're in.
Yeah,
that's better than no tools.
Totally.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens. So.
I think that's the right philosophy, and I mean, especially for somebody who's gonna A, be into InfiniFactory, and then B, try the basic level editor that already exists and be frustrated with the limitations. They're gonna want all the training wheels taken off.
It's not like there's gonna be a ton of people using this anyway,
right?
You know, it's by far still not gonna be the core experience of the game.
For sure. Yeah. Well, like you say, I think there will be a lot of people like down the road when it's fully released and like the buzz has been around for quite a while, who, as with Space Chem, only play the first couple sets of puzzles, and I don't think you have the sense that there's anything necessarily wrong with that.
No, not at all. It's always good when people beat it, but I mean, you have to make the game so long so that way the people who really get into it feel like they get the full experience, that like it's really not reasonable to expect everybody to beat it.
Yeah. I mean, I really have enjoyed playing it kind of slowly, like over a long period of time, because like I sort of appreciate that the puzzles don't last longer than the battery in my MacBook does on a plane. You know, just like to just do one of those and then just like think it over, or get stuck and be like, oh, the battery's running out, and then think, oh, but if I put that over there, is a really, really satisfying experience. You know, like I feel like you struck the balance well. Like, it does escalate in challenge, but it never to me felt like a brick wall, you know, which Space Chem occasionally did, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really hard because there's no difficulty setting in this game.
Sure.
A lot of other games can kind of cop out by letting you pick a difficulty setting, but we could hypothetically do it, but we'd just be making 2 sets of puzzles, and I'm not really a fan of that.
Well, there is an easy mode in the sense that you can worry 0% about optimization. You know, like,
oh, that's true. Yeah, you can kind of select into a harder difficulty.
Yeah. I mean, like, I didn't play any puzzle thinking about optimization the first time through until I felt really good. And then, of course, I, you know, painted myself into corners and stopped doing that. But it's, you know, to me, that's a really, really good way to calibrate for yourself. Because just solving, I think for a lot of people, just getting the thing you need to get made in a repeatable way is plenty of challenge, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So is all of your time still taken up by this? Or if I may ask, are you starting to think about the next thing? Or is the next thing this last campaign you want to add?
We've been thinking about a lot about what we're going to do after InfiniFactory. But we haven't started working on anything. Right now we're working on this next, like, you know, Infina update number 3, mm-hmm. which is going to be the last update before we go to, like, before we leave early access.
Meaning Infina update 3 happens and then you do everything left to do for the full release, quote unquote, or meaning that InfiniFactory 3, Understood. Yeah.
So we're going to add 2 campaigns. So there's going to be like twice as many levels as there have been any of the other updates. Got some features like the advanced level editor that are coming up, but really, like, everything that we really want to do is going to come out in this update.
Gotcha. That's really
exciting.
And then
we'll launch, and then we'll see what happens. I mean, it's always possible that if there's a huge response, you know, we'd do more. It's probably not going to happen. You know, I'm really satisfied with what we have targeted for, you know, what the game will be when we leave early access.
Mm-hmm. What is the time frame looking like for Infin update number 3? Because I
like a month and a half. We sort of we're working on some other like porty kind of things that for InfiniFactory. So mm-hmm. we have to finish up the main content before we can start doing anything else with it.
Sure, that's fair.
So we're really targeting like the end of May, beginning of June for having Infin update 3 out.
Okay, sounds good. That's really exciting. So it seems like your progress has been really fast overall. I don't know, maybe that's just the sense I have, but
it always feels slow on the inside. But yeah, I mean, it'll have been, by the time we launch the full quote unquote released version of the game, it'll have been less than a year and a half mm-hmm. since we started, which is good. I mean, we spent over 2 years on Ironclad Tactics, and then we spent like another 6 months to a year making DLC for it, and like it just took way too long. Mm-hmm. And so this has been a pretty quick project, and I'm really happy with what it is.
Yeah. I can't help but wonder, do you think that the early access thing sped it up to a certain degree because you got to get so much player feedback at not an early stage in development, right? Like you said, it could have released as a game in the state that it hit early access, but how far it's come since then is very impressive, you know? So I wonder if that sped it up, slowed it down or neither, you know?
We've been really aggressive about not doing work that we don't have to do. And even then we still debate, like, you know, like some of the story stuff, right? I mean, we do spend time and resources building story stuff that maybe we don't need to do it in quite the same way. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of varying level. It's something we discuss a lot. Like how much time and resources should we really be spending on things that aren't direct gameplay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of an open question. But in general, we've been much more aggressive about not doing things that we don't have to do.
Sure.
So we use Trello for project management. And, you know, we have tasks, we split them up. We basically have a high pri task list and a low pri task list. And we've been keeping a low pri task list of stuff that honestly we're never going to do. But like being able to shove it into a low pri task list instead of like having to discuss like, oh, do we have to kill this task? It's like, no, let's just make it low priority.
And right,
like,
right.
It's kind of like a BS thing, but it's helped make it easier, at least for me, to deprioritize these things that, like, sure, we would love to do it, but it's like, is this going to bring any value to our customers? Mm-hmm. Not really. Like, a little teeny bit, but not enough, you know?
Yeah.
And just sort of moving to that way of thinking really has accelerated the development time and really allowed us to focus on making stuff that really matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because what a player says matters to them, or what they say was the core of the experience, is not always the same stuff that made the experience special to them, in fact.
Yeah.
You know, like the way that you fleshed out the world, I don't think is what most people would first talk about if they were trying to recommend Infinifactory to a friend. But I feel like that stuff does a lot more sort of subconscious work than most people probably realize.
Yeah,
in terms of making it feel cohesive.
Exactly. And it's really hard to tell like what part of that is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's easy to tell like, okay, we could add this feature, but no one's going to use it, so we shouldn't add that feature. But with a story, yeah, I mean, like people do talk about the story, but no one gushes about the story. No one's playing Infinifactory like first and foremost. Like they're not playing it despite the puzzles. You know, like,
yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to slog through these puzzles because I want to see what happens. It's like, no, like, you really want to see what happens mechanically. Like, that's sort of the thing that keeps people coming back. But, like, that doesn't mean you should get rid of the story. And I think it's important. I mean, if it was just a game that took place in, like, a white room, like, I refuse to believe that that would be just as good of an experience.
Yeah, no, I don't think
it
would.
But I have no reason to believe that. I don't...
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you could, I guess there's hypothetically a way to do A-B testing, but you would have to do it on a smaller scale and all that stuff. And I don't know. I mean, like, it's anecdotal evidence, but when I couldn't find a failure log, I was devastatingly lonely and more determined to solve the puzzle. You know what I mean? Which is really sick, because like, oh, I can't find a corpse to talk to. This is really a bad day for me. But then when I did find one...
Did you see them as a reward?
That's an interesting
question. You were seeking them out.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely was.
Yeah.
Part of it was just the completionist streak in me. Like, if they're there, I want to find them. Part of it was that sometimes, especially in the, you know, toward the back half of the Overlord campaign, they're in interesting little nooks and crannies, which were sometimes useful places to you know, put machinery. Like, getting the lay of the land, especially in terms of gravity, could be really useful in terms of phasing the approach. So it seemed like a good way, like, I'm going to sweep the level, I'm going to see what I've got to work with, and then I'm going to look for corpses, you know? So there's a ritual aspect to it to me, but like it felt really different to be in a level that had one than to be in a level that didn't.
Interesting.
Because there are levels that don't, right? It's not just that I didn't.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. And that's it's an interesting, you know, thing, the way it's paced, you know, because you lose a character you like, and then there's radio silence for a minute, and it did feel like a reward after a period of not seeing one to see one, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It felt like
it was something
like
you got value from it.
Exactly. Oh, for sure. I guess the only reason I resist thinking of it as a reward is I more thought of it as a motivator sometimes.
Yeah.
Like if I didn't see one, I was motivated to get, I feel like, oh, this isn't the victory lap level because I'm not getting audio. So I need to push on and keep learning and refine my skills. And when I did see one, it was like, oh, well, I need to, I don't know, like on some level, it's almost like I'm doing it for Floyd. Like it did offer that little extra push, which I liked a lot.
Have you gone back to any of the levels? Did you find the Infiniminers?
I did not find the Infiniminers. Oh my God.
So we added it retroactively because we couldn't get it in our initial launch. But if you go to level, it's the the claw, the small excavator.
Sure, yeah.
Which you probably don't have solved anymore because we released a new version of it that's simpler.
Hmm.
But there is a new audio log hidden in a cave on that level.
Oh, interesting.
Which does a little bit of a retcon for Infiniminer.
Interesting. Like explains...
I haven't seen anybody talk about it, which is disappointing. But...
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I will check that out. So it retconning in terms of what the story of Infiniminer was, even though...
Yeah, exactly. It turns out it was a thing that really happened in the universe of this game.
It was like a blood sport, or like...
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, that's cool. I will check that out as soon as we're done talking. That's really cool. And that's an interesting thing, too, because, like, so as you're learning about the Resistance and you see, like, the aftermath of battles that humans have had with the Overlords and stuff, there's this whole other game happening behind the game that you don't get to play and that would be less interesting to play, which is just a game about you violently resisting aliens or someone doing it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's interesting that, I know you and I talked last time, and you've talked before, about how the competitive aspect of Infiniminer was what you thought was going to be the interesting aspect, and it turned out not necessarily to be the most interesting aspect to people, so... I kind of love the idea that there's this aftermath of someone playing a competitive and violent game, but that happened before. We don't really care about that.
Yep,
that's yeah, awesome.
I think that's something that I've started exploring more recently. I guess I don't write any of our stuff, but I'm responsible for some of the creative direction. Is the idea of like stories where there's stuff going on, like elsewhere that you're not seeing, but it still has an effect. We talked about the Hunger Games last time.
We did.
And
yeah.
I think that's a perfect example. Is that. Like, there's this whole, like, can we talk about the Hunger Games for a second without spoiling?
No, by all means.
Only about the first, the ones that are out. But, like, the idea that, like, during the second movie, like, there's just all this stuff going on in the background that, like, is totally affecting Katniss. Like, she doesn't have any idea that it's even happening. And that was something that I thought was really cool, and it ties in with, like, some of the way that, like, some of William Gibson's books end, where...
Yeah, totally.
Like, it's a world in flux, and really wanted to capture a sense of that like this is a world in flux. There's stuff happening it's bigger than you. You're just sort of like an actor in this. And I don't want to spoil the ending of the game because we're not finished it yet, so I don't even know what it's going to be. But we should talk about it again after we're totally finished the game, because this is something that we're continuing into like how we wrap up the game.
If you want to have, so that you could think of this podcast as early access, and we're going to iterate on it. And yeah. I would love to talk a third time, because the thing is, I'm going to keep playing this game regardless of whether you and I talk, so we may as well check in every so often. And
okay.
The thing is, I've turned at least like 4 or 5 people onto the game, and we compare notes and stuff, and there's become a little bit... Two of my friends are sort of getting into a pissing contest about who optimizes better, which is kind of fun to watch. And that it's funny because that's not the main appeal to me, right? Like, I like making it work better, but like I've always been the kind of personality that is ambitious without being competitive. Like I actually probably get more invested than I should in like building an aesthetically beautiful factory, right? Like
I'm all about like getting things to like line up and.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and when stuff like waterfalls, like a Zen garden, and things are exactly the right number of blocks apart, and like, I love that shit. It's candy. And that's why the gifts are so much fun, right? Because it looks like this little Zen garden made of machines. It's so neat.
Yeah, and you can show off either play style.
Exactly. And that's true, because when you have something that isn't optimized, it can kind of sprawl in a weird way. Like, I've definitely done dumb stuff, like if I need to change the timing with two parts, I'll, like, just wrap around the building you're starting in just to kill time.
Yeah.
And that's like, the least efficient way to do it, but it looks kind of awesome.
Yeah, so. Totally. That was one thing we learned is that we were... Do you know what a giant rotator arm is?
Yes, totally.
Yeah, so a giant rotator arms, for people who don't know... it's where you build a big arm out of like platform blocks and have it like fall, like it starts off floating in the air, so it's mobile, and then it falls onto rotators and then gets rotated back and forth, because a block can typically only move one unit per cycle, but rotators rotate an entire 90 degrees regardless how long they are in one cycle. So you can move stuff very quickly by attaching it to a giant rotating arm and rotating it across the map. And people build these. A lot of the high scores for like the fastest solutions use giant rotator arms, and they're kind of like cheating. Right, like it's clearly like physically, it's kind of hard to believe that would work. It seems like an overpowered thing. They're kind of clunky. Like it's not, you know, it's not something we intended. And there was a thread on Reddit that someone started about, like, hey, like, giant rotator arms are bullshit. Like, what should we, what, you know, you should get rid of them. And somebody else is like, no, you shouldn't get rid of them. You should get rid of SCUS blocks, which are, you used to be able to eviscerate platforms and then do, like, weird stuff like that. Like, you'd create 10 or 20 platform blocks in specific configurations. So that way, you, like, your factory could make no more than 10 things, but it would do it in, like a hacky, efficient way. So we ended up getting rid of SCUS blocks because they really weren't helping the game, but we didn't do anything about giant rotator arms, eh? Because it'd be hard to fix, but also because they create a lot of motion. And one thing we realized is that people love seeing solutions with a lot of motion in them. And like the GIFs where there's like this giant arm swinging back and forth. Like, yeah, maybe that's not like the best way if you're playing the game. Like, it's not the, you know, it's not fair. But damn, like, does that look cool in a GIF? Like, if somebody's like trying to figure out if they're gonna buy the game and they see this giant arm swinging back and forth, like, they might buy the game. And that's a reason to keep it in.
I definitely thought about, like, tool-assisted speedruns the first time I saw one of those. I did not figure out how to do it without seeing it on YouTube or whatever, you know, but yeah. Those are fascinating. I think maybe, possibly what people resist is just the idea that it's not just the coolest-looking solution, but potentially also the fastest. Like, the idea that it can be both of those things, that it is the flashy way and the efficient way. It just seems, you know, nerf it, you know, I think is probably the biggest reaction.
Well, and I've never built one because the way that you build it, like, it doesn't feel like the rest of the stuff in the game. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, everything, it relies on building stuff that falls and drops onto things, and you're kind of exploiting the fact that you can move, like, you know, rotators back and forth. And I guess they're not that hard to build. I've never actually even tried.
I haven't either. You know? Yeah.
But they just seem kind of like, ugh. Like, I definitely play, not from the optimization angle, but from the trying to make my factory seem like elegant and not even efficient, but just like having it look nice. And like rotator arms, you know, aren't necessarily the best way to do that. So,
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, you're exactly right that I think we're aligned in wanting it to be beautiful, and there isn't anything particularly pretty about the giant rotator arms. They're flashy, but they're not. They don't make you feel calm. They don't make you feel that everything is in its right place in the universe.
Yeah, that's, exactly. I hadn't realized that was my play style, but I think it totally is.
Yeah, I mean, like, because I like when things drop, but not to increase speed. It's because, like, it's graceful, you know? There's, like, a waterfall aspect. Because, like, gravity is really floaty in the game. Like, blocks drop pretty gradually, you know?
Yeah.
It feels nice to watch. So, it's funny, the original MO of this second podcast was to just spoil everything. And we did dive right into some pretty spoilery stuff up top. But we mostly haven't talked about story, right? We've just kind of talked about the experience since. And I wonder if there's, like, you gave the impression last time that there were big secrets that we didn't want to reveal before people had a chance to play the game. And obviously there are a few plot twists. But is that what you meant? Or did you mean something kind of different as far as what you wanted to be discovered?
The big thing was the progression, like, you know, having the story kind of mimic the experience of a player.
For sure.
And being able to talk about that. The bomb sequence, I mean, that's sort of a surprise. We used to have it be that there were, it all showed up on one level select screen, and there were six actual campaigns, and then the two, like, the custom levels and the workshop levels that came after, but you couldn't see what they were, so it looked like there was, like, an eight campaign, an eight planet campaign. And then you get to the end of the sixth one, and you expect there to be two more planets, and it abruptly, like, ends with, like, you're really, like, what the hell's going on with this bomb? And a lot of people were actually really upset. Nobody was like, oh, that was so cool, I didn't expect it. They're just like, oh, I thought there were going to be two more planets. This game is shorter than I thought, and I'm disappointed.
Huh.
So we actually, that was part of the reason for pushing the other stuff onto a different level select screen. So we say, there are six campaigns, and then there are six planets, and then when you get to the end of the sixth one, all of a sudden, holy shit, we just unlocked, like, way more content.
Yeah.
And I think that's a better kind of surprise than this game is shorter than I thought.
Sure. Well, and I mean, I think I definitely saw one thread where somebody was bitterly disappointed about that, but I think because that's the interesting thing about early access is, besides being able to make a better version of that surprise, there was also this good faith thing of, like, oh, well, those two things must represent stuff they're still going to add, which in fact is true, right? Like, that next screen, now there are two additional campaigns there. There are going to be four, right? As well as all the toys and stuff. But I do think this reveal is better because it's more like, I don't know, it reminded me a little bit of A Link to the Past, maybe. Like, you play through the light world and you're like, oh, cool, that was a good length Zelda game. And then there's, you know, twice that much still to go. Like, that cool reveal of a self-contained and satisfying experience that's way richer for being way bigger than you thought it was. Like, the world gets bigger, you know? Because there, I think in terms of story, there were definitely periods in the Overlord campaign where I thought maybe Not that I had so little faith in you as to think I was going to be the chosen one or whatever, right? Because that's a little facile. But I thought maybe the story was that I was the only one who'd made it this far, at least in a really, really long time, and it was going to be that I was just straight up alone at the end. Which would have been, you know, would have been like a Twilight Zone ending. It would have been effective, but not as interesting and not as effective in terms of making the universe a bigger one as the way you went.
Yeah. Another reason for the having like the halfway ending is that with Space Chem, we knew that how far do people get in Space Chem? About halfway. And then they stop playing. And so I wanted it to be that we could put lots of content at the end, but we could still make it so that mostly more people who play it are winners.
That's a really good point. Yeah, because it is relatively easy, not to cut you off, to get to the Resistance campaign and then be like, this is really cool, and I have accomplished something, and maybe I'll come back and do this sometime. you know?
Like we make it really easy too, because you can skip puzzles. Like you can't skip puzzles in the Resistance campaign. You have to do it all. But although the unfortunate thing is that we are like in trying to flesh out the Resistance campaign, there's going to be like a second ending. And then, like, some people are going to be like, well, I beat the game, but I didn't beat the game.
Yeah.
You know, like, at least you're free, right? I feel like at least that's a plus, right? You're free, you didn't, like, beat the game, which I guess kind of defeats the entire purpose. I was trying to create, like, an MMO, like an end game, where like, the idea that, like, you've beaten the game, but there's still tons more stuff, but then, like, in trying to structure it into a cool experience, we've just created, like, nope, there's just a second ending, which kind of defeats the purpose of what I wanted, but... maybe it's okay.
I think it's
at least
okay.
You escaped.
I think there's a significant, if not 100% overlap between the people who are going to be driven to do the really hard stuff and want there to be a lot of levels, and the people who are going to be irked by being free but not seeing the quote-unquote real ending. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think that aligns pretty well. It's not as though there's a bad ending, right? It's not like if you go to the performance review too soon, then you stay trapped
or whatever. No, they're all good endings. There's just two of them.
Yeah.
It's like twice as good.
Exactly. It really does feel like twice the game to a certain degree. Like, it almost feels like there, I don't know, like, maybe I'm just a little bit cynical because there are so many releases, you know, every week, and I feel like there's great stuff, and I can't play all the great stuff, and there's bad stuff, and we're inundated with bad stuff. But I almost feel like to a lot of people, or a lot of developers, the Resistance campaign would be something that would be Infinifactory 2. You know, it would be like...
conceivably, yeah.
Yeah, or a paid expansion, at least, you know what I mean? Not that I'm against paid expansions, but it just there is something that feels really robust about the way it unfolds right now, and I thought it was really satisfying.
Yeah, and it's nice to be able to comfortably deliver something that's satisfying, right? Like, I don't feel like, oh god, we have to charge for this, because if we charge for it, nobody would play it. So, you know, being able to just throw it in as a bonus, I think it is. It creates, like, a stronger value proposition. The one thing is, you know, this is a $25 game. That's more expensive than any other game we've ever made. Space Chem was $20 at its highest, you know? And I don't want people to feel like they didn't get their money's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel really, like, really satisfied with this game that, yeah, we're definitely able to ensure that everybody's getting their money's worth, and it's pretty awesome.
I would have no problem saying to anybody I know, even the cheapest of the cheap asses that I know, I would say to all of them very comfortably that this is $25 worth of game. Like, there's no question in my mind. Like, there are games I really love, puzzle games especially, that it can be hard. Like, the Talos Principle, the game that the Crow Team... and Devolver put out a while ago. Like, that, I loved that game. I really, really enjoyed it. It was a little hard to convince people they should spend $40 on it. You know, like, that was a high price.
$40?
They released it at $40, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I get what they were doing, right? Like, it is, like, it's a big story. It's a long campaign. They didn't want to go 60, but they wanted to say, this is a big, important game of big, important ideas and concepts. You know, take it seriously. But I don't know, man. I feel like it would have sold... a lot more at a slightly lower price point. It's tough.
Quite
pricing
possibly,
pricing is really hard.
Oh yeah.
So Space Chem was 20 at release, and then has, you know, been reduced and been on various sales and stuff since then.
We were 20 when we started selling it ourselves, but we dropped to 15 when we went on Steam, and that was like when indie games started going on Steam. So that seemed like a good move. And then we kind of brought it down to 10 as like our forever pricing.
Mm-hmm. And it's been in like a Humble Bundle once or twice or something similar, right?
Oh,
like,
god, we literally gave away 1 million copies of it.
Wow. Seriously,
PC
1 million?
Gamer. Yeah, we did a promotion with PC Gamer. We got paid like $5,000 to give away like 1 million copies.
Wow.
But it was good. It was a good promotion. We actually sell a ton. We still sell a bunch of copies of Space Chem because people are just like, oh, Space Chem, I'll just go buy it. And we make more money off of Space Chem than Ironclad Tactics.
Interesting. Why is that? You think that's just that slow burn, right? Like Ironclad Tactics probably made a bigger splash when it first came out, you know, relatively speaking.
But because... No, we've made so much more off of Space Chem. Ironclad Tactics is not a good game in the scheme of things. Like it's good, but it's not interesting enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that matters. Like for cutting, we're trying to, you know, it turns out that the indie market is all about cutting through the noise, and the way to cut through the noise is by making something that's interesting. And I think Ironclad Tactics is well balanced and innovative and not interesting, not remotely interesting enough, and doesn't line up with what anybody's looking for.
Mm.
You know, if you want a card game or you want a tactics game, it's not what you're looking for. If you want a card-based tactics pseudo RTS game, then you're gonna love it. And there are people who email me. They're like, "I love Ironclad Tactics." It's just like, "Oh, I'm sorry."
Yeah, right. Well, if you want a card-based tactics pseudo RTS with co-op, then there's a few people for whom that's mana from heaven. You know,
exactly. And there's actually a lot of people who like kind of programming games, and it's actually awesome. And it's funny that like the one advantage that we have has been sort of hiding here all along, which is that there's actually a fair number of people who like programming games, and we are awesome at making them. That's the one. That's unfortunate. I guess the only kind of game that I truly understand how to make is a programming game.
Well, so the layers of meta in the fact that the kind of game you develop is a game about programming, and that this one has a story about what it's like to play a game. That's an onion. But the thing is, so number one, it's a niche that clearly has an audience that you guys are better at than anybody. I can't even think of anybody who really competes in that space, to be honest with you. Like, there are games that are about building machines, there are games that are about solving logic problems, but the idea of engineering or programming is maybe underexplored in games, you know? but it's something that like Space Chem and Infinite Factory would be very obviously the top two, you know, games about that idea that I would suggest if anyone asked me.
Yeah, and so that's sort of, I think, the direction where you were asking about what we're going to do next. One thing we are exploring is virtual reality, maybe? A VR version of Infinite Factory? I don't know. It's one thing we've been thinking about. But like, if not that, then making more like cool engineering games.
Yeah,
like it's kind of our thing. Like, maybe we should make another one. We sort of thought that like maybe Infinite Factory would be the last engineering game we ever make, but maybe not.
There are things about it that scream ultimate. You know, like it's the culmination of a lot of design stuff you've been playing with for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other hand, it's so refined and so beautiful, and you're so damn good at it that it would kind of be a shame if this were it. You know. Like, from my perspective, as just a guy who plays them, that would be kind of my thing.
Yeah.
Is the 3D immersive environment thing, you think, a detour, or is that the style you want to pursue when you think about pursuing more engineering? Or is that an impossible question?
I wish it was a detour, because they're so much more like expensive and difficult to make, but I honestly think that's why the game works so well. It's because 3D, it's just so much better. Like, it's totally different. And obviously not every game will work in 3D. We're working on a little side project engineering game that is very much like not like Infinite Factory. And it's it is about programming, and it is 2D. but the 3D is really what makes it accessible, you know. And I think that's a huge thing.
There's a lot of like you know, people I know with kids who are very, you know, the kids are very, very into the block game thing. Like, a lot of them play Minecraft, a lot of them play one of the clones that have sprung up like weeds in the wake of Minecraft. And I can much more easily imagine, and in fact one of my coworkers did do this, plunking them in front of Infinite Factory as a gateway drug to this kind of game. Like, I can imagine that much more easily than plunking them in front of Space Chem. Right.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's no competition, right? And it's partly the 3D thing. It's partly, again, just that you've gotten more refined in terms of how you communicate the rules of the game. But I think this isn't what most people who are really, really into your games would point at first. But as we've been saying, the fact that it is immersive and the fact that it's pretty, like, really has a lot to do with that. Like, you can't underestimate it.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens in the long run. But yeah, I think that if there's a lesson there, it's, you know, we can keep making engineering games, but they have to be accessible, and this is a good way to do it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I would love to talk a third time after the game is released.
Yeah.
If you're down.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we can talk about the ending, we can talk about how leaving early access goes.
I'm really curious. I doubt you'll be poor. I hope you're a billionaire. You certainly deserve it a hell of a lot more than most. But here's hoping, man. I hope the launch goes really, really well. I think we both keep calling it a launch in sarcasm quotes, because it, like, the game is out.
Uh-huh.
You can buy it. You can play it. And the stuff you're still going to add is the kind of stuff that people add after release all the time, you know, in terms of like making it feel complete. But hey, it's a brave new world, and I'm really, really glad that early access worked out for you as well. Like I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, me too. It's something we're definitely going to do in the future.
Cool. Very, very cool. All right. Well, thank you again so much for your time.
Oh, we should also shill the new Zachtronics podcast.
Oh, let's absolutely do that. I didn't realize you guys had launched that. Are you one episode in or a bunch?
Yeah, one.
Okay.
So we have a new podcast called the Zachtronics Podcast, and basically what we do is we interview other indie developers, but I'm the one asking questions. And so the premise, at least, is that I know all the things that, you know, are involved in running an indie studio, so I can ask people the kind of questions that only another indie developer would know to ask them. And in the process, we can really go behind the scenes and really find out like the nitty-gritty of like how indie games really get made, and like real lessons, real failures, real successes, sort of like all the really cool like behind the scenes info.
That is really cool, and I'm going to subscribe to that right now.
Yeah, so we're on iTunes, and we're on whatever other things that collect feeds from FeedBurner, and our first episode was with Asymmetric Publications, so they make Kingdom of Loathing, and that's sort of their big thing.
That's really cool. I lost many hours to Kingdom of Loathing, so I will enjoy
it. Yeah, it's a really good, if you like Kingdom of Loathing especially, it's a really cool podcast because they talk all about how it came to be and sort of how they sustain it as a business model and the sort of the challenges of going, like making an indie free-to-play MMO that's not like super aggressively monetized. Like they're trying to be like good guys while also trying to keep people employed. Yeah. So there's lots of challenges there that we got into. It's really cool.
I'll definitely listen to that because that's the classic push and pull. Is like, I love this free to play game. It never asked me for money. Hey, why did that game I like go away? That's weird. You know, like it's.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Okay, well, I'll definitely check that out. Anything else to plug? I mean, like the new update for Infinite Factory is fantastic. I'll give that podcast a listen.
It has lasers. Infinite Factory update. Yeah, Infinite Update number 2 is out. It has lasers and like cool lava planets and extruded metal blocks that you cut down into smaller ones and arrange into things. So it's the coolest update. Yeah, maybe.
It's a pretty good pitch. It's a beefy update too. There's a lot of cool new stuff in there. I like it a lot. And the new environments are really beautiful. And yeah, if you didn't like just destroying things with spinning, you know, death drills, now you got lasers. So.
Yeah. And we have more power tools coming in the next update.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you again. This was a blast, and looking forward to part 3.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks.
Thanks. Talk a lot. Later. And that's the show. You have a little more time to check out InfiniFactory on Steam Early Access. Speaking of Steam Early Access, next week we will be talking to Roel Ezendam of Rage Squid Games. Sorry already for pronouncing his name wrong. He and his studio are releasing Action Hank out of Early Access next week, and InfiniFactory will be out of Early Access end of May, beginning of June. You can also hear the Zachtronics podcast at Zachtronics.com, or you can subscribe to it on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbay, etc., which coincidentally are all of the same places you can subscribe to this podcast. Additionally, if you listen to the Zachtronics podcast backwards, while also listening to the audio log that retcons Infiniminer in Infinifactory, the combination will A, make a cake spontaneously generate for you in your oven, and B, that cake will contain a nail file, which will allow you access to the secret room which contains this podcast. Probably easier to just go to etao.wordpress.com.